This is a Mass Timber Today podcast, and I'm Craig Applegath. This podcast explores the opportunities and challenges of sustainable mass timber construction with experts in the design, building, and forestry sectors. In this episode, I talk with Dr. Ann Coven, Director of the Mass Timber Institute, and Robert Wright, who is the Institute's principal investigator. Together, Ann and Robert played key roles in the creation of the Mass Timber Institute at the University of Toronto. In this episode, Ann and Robert talk about the purpose and backstory of the Mass Timber Institute, the launch of this podcast, and what this podcast means for the disciplines of architecture, design, forestry, and construction. They also talk about a number of the projects currently going on at the Mass Timber Institute. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Ann, Robert, welcome to the podcast. I've been looking forward to this conversation. By way of introduction, this is the first podcast interview for the Mass Timber Institute's new podcast, Mass Timber Today. So we thought it would make sense for Ann Coven, Robert Wright, and myself to provide a bit of background about the Mass Timber Institute and what we hope to accomplish with this new podcast series. Trying to stay true to our podcast conversational interview format, I'll be playing host and asking Ann and Rob to talk about the Mass Timber Institute and our new podcast. So why don't we start off by each of you telling listeners what got you interested in mass timber and why you care so much about it now?
Good morning, Craig. As a forester, what motivates me in this entire project with mass timber is the dynamics of sustainability. We care that we have sustainable forests. Most foresters are motivated to keep as much natural forest as we can on the ground. We're motivated by environmentalism. I don't know of any innovation or progressive change in the forest industry that I've observed for 30 years in Canada. I don't know of any that hasn't come from environmental history and environmental philosophy. And so I feel I speak on behalf of many foresters that we are keenly interested in mass timber as a value-added product that will increase the value of each tree we decide to harvest. And of course, the definition of sustainability is environmental, economic, and social. And so I feel by looking at higher value products such as mass timber rather than lumber, and I think it was a British Columbia government in its mass timber roadmap calculated that the value of mass timber is 7 times that compared to wood milled for lumber. And so I'm feeling very excited at the possibility we will achieve more sustainability in the forests and a higher economic return for local communities and indigenous communities with mass timber. That's a long explanation, but that got me into mass timber.
So the intersection of economy and environmental.
I would put environmental first and economy second, but I don't see the point of harvesting trees if human beings aren't optimizing the market value of those trees.
Yeah. Rob, what about you?
Well, I'll blame Ann, but I got involved in mass timber because I was the dean of forestry at the time, and forestry was reconfiguring itself and reorganizing itself. And one of the things that we were looking at was the intersection of forestry to other disciplines. So as you know, my discipline, it comes from the design world. And I was very interested in ecology, of course, but biomaterials, carbon accounting, things that are now emerging as being critical in terms of the way that we both design and plan and build. And we had some intersection with the Ontario government who was interested in this topic. It was emerging here in Canada when we started. And talking with Ann, who has so much experience on the forest industry, we started to begin to look at what were the implications of mass timber and what are the intersections with the way traditional forestry is done and where forestry might happen in the future. So as you know, this becomes a critical thing because the questions that are now emerging around mass timber are questions that are basically all about the bioeconomy and how it's operating. So we're asking questions now. I often think of mass timber as a surrogate for some of the issues we're facing in a way. It has started making us questions. And Ann and I, in our intersection, talking particular architects and designers, we're starting to be asked questions that really were not appropriately answered. And so the mass timbers really emerged out of that ethos.
So that leads to my next question, which is about both of you being instrumental to getting the Mass Timber Institute going. So I'm hoping you could talk about the original impetus for starting the Mass Timber Institute, the MTI, and its core purpose, and what success looks like in the long run.
I think that in terms of the Mass Timber Institute, we really did a kind of road mapping. We looked at the kind of activity in terms of industry and mass timber and what the kind of opportunities were, and can talk more specifically to those reports that we did initially. But theoretically, we kind of mapped the thing and tried to determine on an evidence-based approach what type of research is necessary to understand the use of mass timber, particularly around its sustainability. As you know, our forestry program is very much focused on forest conservation and forest management. And so that was really one of the impetus for doing this thing and to start it off. And it was a kind of re-understanding. And through my conversations with Anne, who knows the forest industry better than almost anybody I know, I realized in my own way that we don't really know a lot about our biomaterials, where they come from, how much they are, how much use can we have out of them, what are the materials being done. So for me, it was an educational process. And for Anne, I think it was something to bring into context the use of forestry and these products that were being developed so people had a better understanding about their use and their implications for the future.
Anne?
Yes, I agree with Rob. I agree with everything Rob says. But also I would add that we have also been listening to the architect, design, engineering community, which is exciting for me because I've had very little to do with that's Rob's in your domain. And in listening to them, that is really shaping what we see the Mass Timber Institute doing. Originally, I thought we would be more involved in sort of diving deeper into some of the technical issues that designers and builders are dealing with mass timber. But as I look around, you may agree or disagree. As I look around, I see that a lot of that work is being done on the run by the companies themselves. You look at a company like Ellis Don with a large building science department. They're looking for their own solutions. You look at Element 5, our only large cross-laminated timber producer in Ontario. They're helping their clients sort out the technical issues of building with mass timber. So I think that work is actually being done. And I think what we're facing at the Mass Timber Institute are really the complex searching questions. So we get to talk to people like KPMG lab architects, and their questions are, I mean, they're almost existential in some way. The questions are, show me, how can I believe that the systems that are in place are actually protecting forest sustainability?
Yeah, I think a lot of architects are asking that question. That's a really key question.
Yeah, these are ethical questions. They're also business questions because your clients are becoming very sophisticated about the environment. And of course, we haven't said anything about climate change, but that's a big driver now and into the future. And so the kinds of questions that Rob and I are seeing at the Institute, I think it's not the set of questions we thought we would be looking at when we set out.
So down the road, what does success look like for MTI?
I think success will look like, if people start, let me go back to what Anne said. One of the things that we realized as we talked to all these people was that people are looking for information. As we're thinking about now about biomaterials, we're asking questions we've never asked of any other material. So I find there's a bit of irony, and you'll see that there are many articles about sustainability of forests, whether we have enough wood, whether we don't have enough wood, where that wood is, how is it being used, etc. We're asking things about wood that we never asked about steel or concrete or any other material. So for me, the future is for, and we're very eclectic, I think, Anne and I in the Mass Timber Institute, we never assume that wood is the only product left in the world and buildings will only be made of wood and things like that. We really thought about what is the kind of thinking and what is the kind of logical process we can look at around some of these issues and begin to compare and make good choices. And I think what was interesting, working with particularly with architects and engineers, is they were asking questions that some of the questions we couldn't answer. So I hope this podcast will bring answers to them or ways of getting at an answer that they hadn't thought about before.
Well, that's a good segue to my next question, which is about the podcast and what you see it being about and the kinds of questions and topics we're going to explore. And who is it aimed at? Who is the audience for the podcast, do you think? Anne?
We've talked a little bit about the kinds of questions on the sustainability issues. And also, I think our audience is going to be quite wide. Certainly, Rob and I, as teachers, are very interested in students and other professors understanding mass timber and igniting an interest in mass timber. And we have are funding actually two very exciting student programs. One being a mass timber structure being installed in Ontario Place that we're funding, and the other being an art exhibit of historical mass timber buildings in Toronto. But the major audience, I think, Craig, will be your colleagues, architects, designers, engineers, and people in government. Remember, we live in Canada. Government does everything everywhere all the time. And certainly they're very involved in forests. All, you know, in Canada, we're accused of having the most highly regulated, expensive forest management planning system in the world that is administered by the government. I'm proud of that fact. I think that keeps everything going along very well. But government is also an important audience.
Rob?
I think Anne's covered it pretty well. I just hope that people who want to engage in the topic and understand anything to do with biomaterials or biology or ecology is a very complicated process. To give you an example, it's always contextual. Forests in the Maritimes are, we may think they're the same, but they're not the same as the ones in Ontario or Quebec or in BC or in Alberta. They all have their own individual ecologies. So how do we actually navigate those complexities at the same time do the best to preserve the forests we have for long-term in the future? One of the great things about a biomaterial, and forests are probably the best example of that, is that there's no other material that you can actually replace over time in a way that can renew itself. And people are very interested in how we learn to do that and how we make wise decisions around how we use our wood in terms of Canadian context.
I think, Craig, can I weigh in here with one other comment?
Sure.
You said this was a conversation.
Indeed, it is. What should be? People won't listen to it otherwise.
I think what we overlook in the conversation about forests and using wood is because of a very regulated environment we have in Canada about forestry. Going into the future, smaller and smaller amounts of the land base will be used for forestry. And the reason for that is our laws have become, over the last 30 years, more and more complex, and we net out every other environmental and social benefit before we permit forestry, harvesting wood on any piece of land. And the forest industry is very aware of the fact that their ability to operate on the land base is shrinking. They've accepted that. They understand that. And so again, that is a business push that will lead to, I believe, even a bigger embrace of mass timber as a value-added product for the forest industry.
At this point, we should probably mention some of the guests that we're planning to interview. So who are some of the key guests that we're looking at down the road?
Alan Organsky is a very exciting architect with a practice in wood going back quite a long time. He also taught at Yale. He's now executive director in Germany of Bauhaus Earth. And his view of mass timber is very global, to the point where he's also interested in what indigenous communities around the world are doing about forests and conserving forests and surviving on the benefits of forests. So certainly for our indigenous communities in Northern Canada, the idea that it will now be their turn to show us some of the traditional stewardship practices they know so well, I think is a very exciting idea. We'll be hearing from Lacey Rose, who is regional forester for Renfrew in the Ottawa Valley. And Lacey will talk about the importance of mass timber, the promise of mass timber by way of perhaps small operations that can produce different mass timber products in rural and northern communities. And again, opportunities for indigenous communities. Mass timber mills do not have to be the size of old pulp and paper mills. They don't have to be gigantic industrial apparatus from you know, generations, decades ago, they can be actually quite small and efficient. And so I think that really excites those of us who don't think everything begins and ends in Toronto and Vancouver and Montreal.
We've also got some engineers like Franco Piva from Italy. He's an internationally renowned mass timber structural engineer. He's a lot of fun. And then constructors like Patrick Crabb, head of mass timber Bird Construction, and architects like Robert Schmitz from White Architects in Sweden.
I think also, Craig, there are two issues that we never seem to get around, and I'm sure we will always discuss, and those are concerns about fire and concerns about insurance. And so certainly we'll be tackling those in our interviews. Those have been questions about using mass timber that no matter the amount of experiments or literature we produce, there's
oh, I know. I know fire is one that I don't think being an architect that uses mass timber on projects, I don't think that the fire one's ever going to go away because people see wood and they just think of fire. But interestingly, our concern about mass timber and how to use it effectively, one of the big issues is water, not fire. The chances of fire are much less than the chances of water. And water is insidious because it gets into the mass timber and feeds fungus, which can rip through mass timber and make its own water once it's growing. I think that's a bigger and more hidden challenge. And in fact, I was just talking to Franco Piva the other day about a forensic study he's doing on water and mass timber, but certainly something to talk about. And what do you think success looks like for this podcast? Like, is it number of viewers or the most interesting people? Or what does success look like for you and Rob too?
I think success for me is attracting more attention to the educational and training agenda, because I do teach into the Master of Forest Conservation Program at U of T. And we have, in Canada, really lost our bench strength by way of teaching about wood design and construction. Your profession, architects, are really leading the charge on interest in mass timber. You're excited by its beauty and its versatility and so forth.
And ability to store carbon.
We haven't even gotten to that. And so I see that building at U of T among our students in engineering and forestry and architecture. And so I see that as something that the podcast could really inspire more students to understand what the issues are and to excite them about working in mass timber. I think that's where we're going. We've been invited by the Canadian Wood Council to sit on a roadmap exercise they will be doing this spring and summer. And I think that's interesting. I mean, our job at the Mass Timber Institute isn't to promote any particular business or industry, but it's always interesting to see people's business plans and how they see making mass timber, talking about mass timber markets. We have a very exciting researcher, Razul Yosifpour, who is doing a project for us on mass timber supply and demand in Ontario. So we're very interested in how the business of mass timber goes, but we're finding more and more, I think our mandate is more complex than that. And I would also add, I would see our mission as being successful if we could make those bridges between mass timber, concrete, and steel. Because when I try to spend some time with the literature and so forth, I don't like to see industries cherry pick particular data to make an argument. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all do that. It's not just the industry. Yeah. Everybody cherry picks data to make an argument. But I think with mass timber, we have the opportunity, and also we have other great organizations within the University of Toronto, the Institute for Sustainable Building in Engineering, with which we'll also be involved. And I think it's really an opportunity for the concrete, steel, and wood people to get together. Because I think mass timber certainly should be welcome with open arms, I would think, by concrete and steel. As Rob said, I can't see mass timber replacing concrete in any, there will always be a need for an affordable wood product. So,
well, at the very least, you're going to have to found your building and it's going to be on concrete.
Exactly.
And I mean, our experience as architects and engineers at Dialogue has certainly been that a hybrid set of structural systems makes the most sense.
Yes, it does.
Mass timber brings along with it steel for connections and concrete for piers and foundations. I don't think any of the industries have to be too worried about it. It just seems to create more opportunities. But anyway.
Yes. So I see that as being a successful outcome of some of our efforts in the future.
Rob, what do you think?
I think we're at a very interesting time, and you would know this as an architect. We're seeing the processes, everything from supply chain to the way we're constructing now, or we're trying to figure out how to construct things in an inflation environment. Carbon change, climate change, we're really being challenged with rethinking the way we think about buildings. You know, we know, for example, that if you preserve a building, you'll save more carbon than you'll ever by knocking it down and replacing it with something. So we're trying to figure out how to do that. We know that there's no new requirements on the reusability of materials. Can they be deconstructed and reused so we're not wasting so much? And I just think these are the questions, and mass timber is a great entry into that discussion. I've always believed that every design building is a hybrid building. It's always been hybrid. It's a question of how much and what, whether it's one thing or another. But also what I'm very interested in is the challenges, and you would know this in timber buildings. Timber buildings, steel buildings, or concrete buildings have their own sets of systems and approaches to doing things, and they're not the same. So trying to do one system for all doesn't make any sense. And so I'm really, well, I hope our listeners will be challenged to think about these things in a much deeper way. And I can tell you our students are thinking about this. The whole issue about climate change and whether we'll have forests in the future and whether there will be timber for them to renew and use is a big question in terms of our younger students. These are issues of their time. And I'm hoping that we will raise enough awareness that people will keep asking these questions. I was just talking to somebody the other day in my office, and they pointed to some birch plywood that I had in my as a table and said, where did that wood come from? And that's a very interesting question because, you know, again, many architects have been asking us, for example, when I buy lumber, where did it come from? What mills produced it? You know, where are those areas in the country? And things that we haven't thought about for a long period of time. I mean, who thinks about forestry other than, you know, we go to Home Depot? Some of the things we haven't thought about a long time are affecting us in almost all the materials we use now. So I'm hoping it will encourage people to get more engaged in these types of issues.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm also thinking one of the things the podcast could do is create a sense of community of the many different voices and expertise and interest involved in mass timber. I'm really hoping that that's one of the benefits and results.
Well, one of the most exciting things for Ann and I have been is it really has been a community of interest that has driven this. It's not just academics, it's practitioners. Both of us and Ann in forestry, we're in applied fields. So our research is applied every day into the type of work we do. And then we come back and try to think about it and do it. So I think that really is an important aspect of the fact that this is a community project. I would say there are many architectural firms like yours or others that are way ahead of the curve on some of this stuff. Other people are just entering into this dialogue. But also there's so much more work for us to do. And no one group, no one siloed group is ever going to answer these problems unless we do it as a community.
Oh, agreed. And in our podcast interviews, what we plan to do at the end of our interview is ask our guests what books, articles, podcasts, or blogs they would like to recommend to listeners. So why don't we do the same? Anne, why don't you go first?
I would quickly recommend three books written by women who were trained as foresters and have moved into different sciences, mostly involved with climate change and geobiology. And I do so because more than 50% of the students I teach are in the Master of Forest Conservation class. We've noticed this for at least the last 8 years. Women are getting into forestry, whether they want to work for the industry or government or environmental groups. And so I feel this great progressive movement of women into forestry will also cause some interesting questions to be asked as we go forward. So the three publications I would recommend would be Suzanne Simard's The Mother Tree.
Oh, yes, that's wonderful.
She's an academic from UBC. Suzanne talks about the relationship between soil and tree roots, the mycorrhizal relationships. She's taken a bit of a hit of criticism for that because some of this research was done in the 1800s in Europe. And people think she's saying this is all new. She's not saying that. She's done some very good science. And I think the importance of her work also is in the public's embrace of it. They find the book accessible. They are excited by the idea of tree communication and tree networks. And I think that's all to the good if we can interest the public even more in forestry.
By the way, I love the phrase that's come out of the Wood Wide Web.
The second book I would recommend is Hope Yaron's book, A Lab Girl. I think that's from maybe 2015. And she has become very important a scientist in climate change, looking at carbon in rocks and trees and plants. And I think she's very inspiring and is making a very big, big difference in science. And the third book I would recommend is The Arbornaut, which is Lohmann's book from 2021. And she really was a pioneer in climbing up to the tops of trees, including hundreds of meters off the ground in tropical forests.
Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
Good for her, but an inspiration nonetheless. And so those would be my choices for people who are interested in exploring the forestry side of MEST.
And we'll put these on the podcast notes so people can reference them, right?
Yes.
Rob?
So I think my focus, I read a lot, but my focus lately has been on trying to pre-think things. So one of the books I would recommend to your listeners is Risk Thinking in an Uncertain World by Ron Dembo. And Ron ran a company a long time ago called Algorithmics, but now he's moved on to a company that's involved in risk design. And he provides financial, basically, risk assessment for large-scale institutions. And Ron's focus has been most recently on climate change and the implications of climate change on our economies. He's been very much trying to let people know that the issues of climate change are not are not divorced from the issues we're going to face economically into the future. And I think that's a very important thing for people to realize, that whenever we deal with climate change, we're going to have to deal with it, or there are going to be serious economic implications for us. The second one is a book that I'd read, but also you sent me, was called Braiding Sweetgrass: Indigenous Wisdom and Scientific Knowledge in the Teaching of Plants by Robin Wall Kilmer.
Isn't that lovely?
When I talk about changing the way you're thinking, as we're involving ourselves in reconciliation and other Indigenous issues, it's so important to actually see other points of view or hear other voices of lived experience. And as Anne mentioned, when we think about forests, you know, most of our Indigenous communities are based in forest settings, and also are the most affected by, you know, insect damage, fire damage, those sorts of things. They are really the custodians of the last of our wilderness or our forests. And so I think that's a very important thing to begin to understand the types of ways of thinking and looking at that. And the last one I will say was, I go and read every so often, is Gratitude by Oliver Sacks.
Yes.
And that's a sort of book, as you get older and have lived a life of privilege and trying to figure out what you do in your waiting years, or let's say, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
It's a very good book to sit back and think about all the things and the privilege that we have relative to the kind of lifestyles and things that we live that are going to fundamentally change, but understand what are the basic principles or philosophies that we should actually be starting to think about in this world, particularly for the people that come after us.
He's such a good writer.
Yes.
And Robin Wall Kilmer,
yeah.
I'm wondering if we could get her on the podcast. That would be great. She would be amazing.
It'd be amazing to do.
Yeah. So I'm going to pitch in a couple of books here. The first one is A Trillion Trees, Restoring Our Forest by Trusting in Nature. And this is a wonderful book I just finished by environmental journalist Fred Pierce. And I've read a lot of books about trees and forest ecosystems, but I must say that this is one of the most compelling. It's a wonderful exploration of the ecological dynamics of forests, as well as the social, economic, cultural, and political forces that determine their fate. And I'd suggest it's a must read for anyone who cares about sustainable forests and sustainable mass timber. He's very compelling. He looks at forests around the world, different ecosystems, what they have in common, what they don't, and what's really going to be required to maintain the health of forests, but also refurbish and restore forests that have been damaged. And the second one, sort of the same theme of forest regeneration, is a fascinating book. When I first started reading, I thought, is this a book about poetry or is this a book about forestry? It's called Islands of Abandonment, Nature Rebounding in the Post-Human Landscape by Scottish investigative journalist Cal Flynn. And she goes to all of the various sites around the world that have been damaged almost irreparably by human beings and looks at how they've rebounded. Like sites like Chernobyl, sites like Verdun from the First World War, sites like New Jersey Shore, where they've been contaminated by PCBs, and how no matter how much damage we've inflicted on the environment, nature rebounds and grows. And interestingly, what ties them both together is probably the best way to restore a forest is to leave the area alone and it will come back. It's almost impossible to stop it from coming back. Anyway, two lovely, lovely books. So, Anne, Rob, thanks very much for your time today. That's been a really interesting conversation, and I think it bodes well for the podcast. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about MTI and what it will be up to in the next few months?
I would add, Craig, I'm surprised that Rob didn't talk about a book that he and Bridget Shim wrote called From Factory to Forestry Floor.
Oh, it's because Canadians are too humble.
Well, I'm not letting him get away with that. He and Bridget and I assisted with helping them with the course. And we organized a very large studio lab for his Master of Architect students. And it was really before Element 5 was built in St. Thomas. And it was an amazing process, the lab itself. And the book is quite wonderful. And the second publication that we funded is Ted Kessick, who is an associate,
yes,
one of the founders of the Mass Timber Institute.
Yep.
Did the first mass timber primer.
Yep. Which is on our website.
Which is on the website. I think it's the first one done anywhere. And we get emails from companies across the United States and Canada saying, we really found that useful. It's such a practical guide. We're just starting. We have a client. They might want to do mass timber. What do we look at? So we found, so those are publications, and I would like to see us do more of that work.
The other thing I hope, we've also been involved with an engineering company and architects who are working on actually doing detailed carbon assessments of buildings in terms of how much actually wood is in these buildings and economic strategies or costs associated with those, because everybody wonders about those things. So as you can see, many of the things are applied, but I also hope that people will start to think about the urban forests and the forests of Southern Ontario, which are gone mostly, and think about the fact that if we want renewable resources, then we're going to actually have to build more sustainable landscapes to support these resources. So one of my, Anne has done some amazing inquiry into hardwood forests that exist in Southern Ontario and how we're using that wood, which is, again, a very interesting thing. Or the opportunity to create new forests in Southern Ontario where none exist and the land is lying fallow now and not being used for farming purposes because it's not of the class of agricultural land that just sits there and waits for something to happen. It's already happening. It's your 100-year scenario.
Yeah.
It's happening. But if we want to use renewable resources, then we're going to have to invest in those resources themselves. And one of that thing means climate change inevitably is forcing on us that we'll have to manage our resources much more carefully. It's not just something we can leave in many cases if we want to maintain what we have.
Yeah, and I'm thinking one of the topics for a podcast down the line is the transformation caused by a changing climate in what forest makeup looks like. And our role in that transition, is it something that we leave to Mother Nature? Or do we help it? And what does it mean when we're doing planting in urban contexts? So I think there's a lot of interesting questions, a lot of sort of a sad topic in a way because of climate change, but it's one that we really are going to have to come to terms. Anyway, well, that was a lot of fun. And I'm really looking forward to future episodes of the Mass Timber Today podcast. We'll all three of us be interviewing various folks, and I think it's going to be really, really positive and really interesting.
Thank you very much, Craig. And Ann.
Thank you, Craig. And Rob.
Thanks, guys.
The Mass Timber Today podcast is produced by the Mass Timber Institute at the University of Toronto's John H. Daniels Faculty of Architecture, Landscape and Design. Each podcast explores the opportunities and challenges of mass timber with experts in the design, building, and forestry sectors to shed light on the future of sustainable mass timber construction. You can find show notes, including references mentioned in this podcast, on our website at masstimberinstitute.ca, where you can also view our current projects and subscribe to our MTI newsletter. This episode was edited by Derek Welsman and produced by Sean Shuklaw at the Mass Timber Institute. We'd also like to give a special thanks to Dialogue for their generous sponsorship of this podcast. If you like this podcast, please rate us at the Apple iTunes ranking site. You can also reach us on our website, and we'd love to hear from you with any suggestions for future interviews.